anthemic in many ways. Sean Mullins and Lullaby. Kind of like Nashville with a tan. Surely some way of actually describing the Hollywood scenario, which we might actually ask our ace writer and producer extraordinaire. In fact, in my hands at this very moment, dear listener, I'm holding a piece of pure gold. Absolute gold. It's treasured. Katie's already heard. It's television history. This is quite literally television history. Hannah, do you talk to you about this particular thing that's there?
Wonder Woman.
It is the script to not just any Wonder Woman episode, The New Adventures of Wonder Woman, The Adventures of Wonder Woman, and Galt's Brain, technically The Brain, written, of course, by a genuine legend when it actually comes to, you know, getting scripts together, coordinating things. We talk Green Hornet, we talk the Addams Family, we talk May Gray, we talk a whole... Whom can we possibly be referring to, Hannah?
Arthur Weingarten.
Arthur Weingarten, are you indeed there?
I am. I'm always speechless for the first 10 seconds of your wonderful lead-in, though.
We only call them as we see them, Arthur. It's always important from that point of view. I mean, you know, Katie was trembling when I said, Arthur, can you get Arthur online today? She said, but he's a legend. I said, there we are.
He's a legend. You're so over the top. I love you.
it's important that we're sort of with you. Now, even better, I mean, I was talking to our country music correspondent in Nashville just a few moments ago, and the listener will confirm this. In my left hand, I'm holding disc 3 of the third season of The Wild Wild West, wilder than ever from that point of view. But before we actually talk about the night of the Circus of Death, I think it's fair to say, Hannah and Katie, you may not necessarily have actually appreciated the sheer wonderment that the Wild Wild West television series actually was. 4 seasons of magic in the 60s, primarily because, of course, you were 30 years from being born when that was coming through. That's okay. It's understandable. You know, 28 is just time that's working through. And you may have actually sort of only had an experience of the Wild Wild West movie at the end of the 90s, which, as I said, was just... It was... Why? Why didn't they just call it something else with Will Smith and Kevin Kline, I think? Wiki Wiki Wild Wild West, etc. So to set the scene and to actually sort of talk us through the night of the Circus of Death, I think, Arthur, it's only fair that we actually introduce probably one of the best TV themes that came out of a television golden age of the 60s. Are you set for the Wild Wild West, the music?
Yes, I am.
You see, a little piece of magic, and also ties into that other classic line created, of course, by Michael Garrison with Bruce Lansbury. That's Bruce Lansbury, who I think is Angela Lansbury's brother.
No, it's her youngest son.
Is it weird? Because don't you see, this is obviously where IMDb has gone very confused on this, because in terms of the routines, we have Bruce Lansbury only 4 years younger than Angela Lansbury. And I was thinking, surely some mistake here in various ways. Yeah. But, of course, there was a connection when we talked about the Lansbury connection, clearly with the joys of Wonder Woman and indeed beyond. But the Wild Wild West, share with us, Arthur. As I mentioned, we have the classic notion of the Man from U.N.C.L.E., which always used to have a fair at the end of the title. The Wild right. Wild West always used to begin with the night of. You know, the night of the midweek drive.
I think that's got a certain ring to it, hasn't it?
And in the case of the Night of the Circus of Death, we have a little strapline here, Jim and Artie, because indeed it refers to Jim West, James West, and Artemis Gordon, hence referred to as Artie, as opposed to Artemis, because it's very rare that you actually use the name Artemis. I don't know why, but there we are. Played by the fabulous Ross Martin, I believe, and James West, of course, played by Robert Conrad. Jim and Artie infiltrate a travelling circus to stop a counterfeiting plan even, before it devastates the United States economy. And you had tiger, you had lions being tamed by Jim West there. You had the femme fatale. You had all sorts of exciting things, etc. It was just pure escapism. So was it a joy to write, Arthur? Or do you think, what have they given me the Night of the Circus of Death to do?
Yeah, no, it was great fun to do because, first of all, as you say, there the concept of these two fellows roaming the West and solving crimes or bringing villains to justice was an old idea. What was unique to it was that there were, quote, modern inventions. In a cast iron age, they foresaw things that we're using today in modified form electronics. So there was always some new invention that was going on. And that was the fun and pull of the show. As well as the chemistry between the two fellows, because there really was some wonderful chemistry. They liked each other very much, and yet they were very, very different people. Very, very different.
I mean, there were times looking at it now when, and it hasn't been released, I don't think, on Region 2 as yet. A great mistake for people in Britain and Europe who actually say, we want the Region 2. No, you need to have a Region 1 player. I don't know, DVD scenarios. But in terms of the episodes themselves, it struck me as being the natural successor to the old buddy movies. If you remember the notion of Bob Hope and Bing Crosby on the road to Morocco and various other things, there were elements of that came into it. And obviously, we mentioned it was at the height of that whole notion where we'd have, in the case of The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Ilya Kuryakin, played by David McCallum, still doing great stuff in NCIS, and Robert Vaughn as Napoleon Solo, and even, dare I say, I Spy with Robert Culp and Bill Cosby. You know, you had that kind of two male leads, admittedly, from that point of view, who would effectively kind of coordinate, and it was the chemistry that came out of that. Before these days, we have the ensemble cast, you know, where it looks as though you have a cast of at least 10 or 12 people, and they all are kind of leads after a fashion.
The idea of two fellows doing things was, friend radio days, of course, was there, but not in motion pictures. There was always the lead fellow and then the second banana. What worked here, especially in the Wild Wild West, was that you had two very different people working together on to solve one crime or one injustice. And those characters were as important as the plot. Ross Martin, for example, had a classical background. He had trained to be a Shakespearean actor, and he had done quite a bit of theater. It showed. He had somewhat of the more wry, thoughtful role between the two fellows.
And, of course, he always had a different disguise, or it seemed almost like a different disguise every week.
Yes.
That he actually worked through on the whole process.
Yes.
I mentioned the movie. I don't know why, but I did. And I did go to say, and you know, I asked that question, why? I mean, I know that Hollywood, it's intellectual real estate, I'd suggest, Arthur, that, you know, it was a hit, so let's mine it again. Let's see if people go and see it, etc. Occasionally it does work, but in times when they actually do it, and you just think, well, why have they actually done this? I mean, Will Smith, a great actor, but he wasn't right for James West.
Well, from the very start, as you see, as you were so right, in the remakes, first of all, you have a very different Hollywood today. And by today, I mean in the last at least 20 years. You have people who grew up, or if they didn't grow up watching these shows, they had heard about them and then came to them secondhand. So to them, this was revelatory and nostalgic things. When they got some power to what's called green light a project in Hollywood or in the UK to let it go to film, they mined their childhoods or thereabouts, that neighborhood. And they made a fatal mistake. That which works on television axiomatically almost never works in a motion picture. It can sustain for a half an hour or an hour, and each week you look forward to the new episode or an adventure. But if you're going to sit for an hour and a half, give or take, or 2 hours, it's not going to work. It usually isn't going to work. And not only that, but the chemistry, you're shoehorning people who are very popular and therefore box office into very often material that isn't meant for them. And Will Smith was not meant for this.
Indeed. I mean, great hero in his own routine, good actor. Same with Kevin Kline, I think, who
took
on board the Ross Martin routine.
What
they had Kenneth Branagh doing Miguelito Loveless for. That was Michael Anderson. For goodness sakes.
Right.
Dear Lord, also the whole character, Michael Anderson, Miguelito Loveless, he was a person of restricted height. That was the whole thing. He hadn't lost his legs in the Civil War. Why did he... Sorry. As you can tell, Arthur, sometimes it just irritates me. Don't get me started on Val Kilmer's incarnation of the saint, because that's...
all of that. And then, of course, they do things constantly that are... the Sherlock Holmes things, which are a runaway hit, the motion pictures. But to take a title, now that it is, so much of it is in the public domain, Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes bears no resemblance to Robert Downey Jr.'s Sherlock Holmes. It's the title, but that's it. It's empty.
Yeah, I suppose you could arguably say, well, yes, that's exactly what's happened with James Bond and so on. But I think in this particular case, because the original sort of format was of the TV series, and I still feel that actually the most successful movies and such like, when they do base themselves on the work, and that even goes so far as to say Sherlock Holmes, Harry Potter, etc., they actually are true to the original source material. What do you think, Hannah?
I think it's an interesting kind of idea, really, because you've got the original Sherlock Holmes books, but then you've got the film and you've got the TV series as well. And they're all quite different in their own right, but they all kind of take on certain aspects, don't they?
You've got the updated Sherlock Holmes with Benedict Cumberbatch. You've got another one being set in the United States with Johnny Lee Miller, I believe, in the New York scenario.
Oh, Johnny Lee Miller.
Well, there we are, Katie. I used to like Will Smith until he actually did James West, but still, never mind. It's all right. Tuned out from that point of view, we shall work through that. We talked briefly about The Man from U.N.C.L.E. as well. That was a similar series as well in terms of the system. Do you think, have we moved on from that? Or do you think we can ever actually produce series in TV which actually had that innate sense of fun and adventure that both of those shows actually provided, and still actually do if you actually look at them, you know, as TV archive material?
Well, the problem that I see today, aside from being an old croc, so therefore I get grumpy when I see things that I say, why are you doing this? And there probably is a good reason, but it's eluded me, is that in Man from U.N.C.L.E. it was tongue-in-cheek. Oh. We took the Bond thing that was so brilliant in the books and in the movies, and we translated it to a television medium, but so instead of Smursh, it was Thrush. And for anyone who, especially mothers and young fathers, the first thing you have with in childhood when your baby is born is thrush, a condition, a fungus in the mouth. So right off the bat, you're playing with things, and there's a playfulness just in the very fact that the organization you're going after is a medical condition found in childhood, and the fellows played it that way, and all the scripts were done that way, so that yes, the action was interesting, and you were there, but it was never meant to stretch anyone's intellect, yet. It's memorable today the world over. It's been translated. The last I heard, we attended a nostalgia convention, and one of the fellows who directed a lot of the episodes told me that it's now in 48 languages it has been translated to. So that's quite something for a television series that was done so many years ago.
We must actually access the Thrush Roulette Affair, which was, of course, the title of the show he directed, of course, and two shows from The Girl from U.N.C.L.E., the short-lived one-season spin-off with Stephanie Powers, Stephanie Powers, and Mark Slate, portrayed by Noel Harrison, Rex's son, I believe.
That's right. And it was a shame, because I really felt there was a chance for that, had they allowed it to go on a bit, for that to gain a larger audience. And what happened there was it had been set for a second season, and indeed I wrote two scripts for that season. That never happened. And there was a scheduling conflict as well as personnel conflict, and out the window it went.
We should clearly look to make them now. You know, the campaign starts, you know, Arthur Weingarten's scripts from the 20th century, good enough for the 21st. You know?
Right.
We can have Hannah as April Dancer. That would be your official name for the girl from Uncle. You know, nice little woman.
Bethany was just wonderful for that. She was just perfect for it.
I'd be quite happy to do an Alexander Waverley routine, if you wish, played by Leo G. Carroll.
Yes, you would get it, I have to tell you.
All sort of thing. In fact, the table that we're sitting at present, Arthur, is very reminiscent of the actual United Nations Network Command for Law and Enforcement table that they actually had, except you can access the studio without having to go through the back of a tailor's shop.
But, that's it.
Different line entirely. Or as they said, I know in The Return of the Man from Uncle, it was through a different environment entirely, but that was a later scenario. And of course, actually, keeping praised of that, a bit of TV trivia, Ian Fleming was also consulted originally by the producers of The Man from Uncle, I believe, because the character Napoleon Solo does actually appear, or there's certainly a character. Mr. Solo is one of the gangsters in Goldfinger.
Yes, well, Norman Felton, who created The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and was a wonderful writer himself, was such a fan of Ian Fleming's that he invited Fleming to come over and sort of act as a liaison between Bond and Napoleon.
Curiously enough, in Dublin this week, they're celebrating 100 years since Bram Stoker popped his clogs. They said, he's created Dracula, we'll celebrate the anniversary of his death as opposed to his birth. I think it's Irish to myself, but other than mine, that's all.
Yeah, well, that's the Titanic, thing. Yes.
Yeah.
So it's all happening at the same time.
It's most peculiar. I suppose it's the European equivalents of celebrating the Alamo and indeed Pearl Harbor. You know, keep those sort of things going.
Yeah.
However, let us move on from there to move on to the 80s. You know, so we're getting close into hand and again a remake of a series, but this one actually worked because, dare I say it, Arthur, I think you actually had a sensitivity to the original Rupert Davis script with the classic da 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 da. Etc. etc. I'm not going to hum the original theme, which is, thank the Lord for that. Yes, please. But we will actually give you a little tune to, of course, the series Maigret. You talk about all-star casts. Not only did you have the late, great Richard Harris, of course, as Maigret, and I think, you're looking, this is good, etc. You also had Victoria Tennant. You had Ian Ogilvy, of course, who's a semi-regular on the show, etc. And, of course, the fabulous Annette Andre, also in the series. Brilliant, you know, from that sort of Caroline Munro. Right idea, possibly wrong time? What do you think? Because, I mean, was the intention to go to a series, or was it just going to be a one-off TV movie?
Yes, no. The intention was to go to a series, and there were several good/bad reasons why it didn't happen. The response to it was quite good world over. We were going to and did syndicate that 2-hour pilot, and it was very successful the world over that way. What happened is that Richard Harris had committed to several feature films beyond that, and so the timing there would have held it off for a year, and or at least a year. And Georges Simenon, who in his best day, may he rest peacefully wherever he is, but at his best day was a curmudgeon beyond belief.
Sometimes you face it, very rarely actually, because usually when you find that people reach a certain level of professionals, etc., they maintain that. But yes, there are occasionally what I refer to as the prima donna syndromes that occasionally crop through.
He had it in spades, and when it took me over 10 years to get the rights to do it, because the way he licensed his Maigret material was for 3, 4, 5, 10 years at a time. time, country by country. Thailand may have it for 3 years, but Great Britain was tied up for seven, and this one. So it took forever to acquire all the world rights, and we did make this 2-hour pilot movie. And when I told him that it would take at least a year or so that before we could get Richard Harris back to start for a series, he said, absolutely not. I have other people that are interested for doing it. And he just refused to sit still for it. No, the man was worth several fortunes, but if you held out a pound note to him, you got his attention. So that was it.
Well, or perhaps a French franc, perhaps. I don't know.
Yes.
In those pre-euro days that we used to have in terms of individual currencies.
Actually, not a French franc. He lived in Switzerland.
Oh, but for a Swiss franc then.
That's right.
Understandably, never mind. Yeah. Of course, interesting, Richard Harris, in the end, the role of Maigret was taken by Michael Gambon. Not just, he also took over from Richard in Dumbledore, or as Dumbledore.
Yes, exactly. Curious. There was the synchronicity there was. And I must say, the reason Michael Gambon did the reincarnation of Maigret and ended up a 2-season Granada series was all thanks to Annette André.
I'm not surprised. Exactly.
Yes. Yep. When I got the call from Granada saying that they would very much like to do the series, but who did I think should play the role? We went through everybody you could think of, and there was one problem after another. This one couldn't do it, and that one. And Annette said, Michael Gambon, don't even think beyond that. And sure enough, that was it.
Absolutely wonderful. Of course, the other interesting thing is these days you'd have to have Maigret without the cigarette. You know, that iconic sort of notion of the Maigret cigar, cigarette, etc. have to go completely.
Yes. Not
one at all. Quite rightly so. Hannah, I know you're always keen on doing rehearsals, and we've got a little revelation about Hannah O'Brien to reveal. As the show proceeds, suffice it to say, it incorporates her being in the studio audience for a very, very popular game show, Arthur. Which I don't think has actually translated over to the States as yet.
I don't think, not yet.
No, it hasn't. Surprisingly.
I'm sure it will eventually.
It's the sort of thing which I'd almost would have thought would have come from the States to here. It's so ridiculously simple, but never mind. Deal or no deal, in case you're wondering, Arthur.
Yeah,
it's extraordinary. but anyway. Hannah, any questions for Arthur?
Arthur, what gives you, do you have set characters that are given to you, or do you invent your characters more often?
Well, aside from the leads, which are done in the pilot of a television series, you come up with your own characters, the plot line characters, where the one or two set people in it, like the Addams Family, all those characters were set. But any storyline with new people, the writer is meant to come up with that story and those characters.
And what do you think is your favourite character that you've ever written?
I would say of all of them, the Maigret, because there was such a sense of both theatricality and reality there, and he was a human being. Not someone who, like CSI Today or all the shows, the closest I could get to was Prime Suspect, where she acted as Maigret did more on instinct than on a microscopic examination. So yes, I would say the Maigret character.
So you wouldn't necessarily say that my idea of actually casting either Will Smith or Eddie Murphy as Maigret would be a goer, do you think, in terms of the movie version? Just a thought,
No, but I would tell you for civil rights it would do a world of
good. Well, exactly. It's just a thought. You might actually consider that in terms of, the shows that never quite got made. Standing.
No, I have to. Do we have time for me to digress for a second?
I think so. Always, Arthur. Yeah.
Well, in a series that they were Quinn Martin, who had many successful series on television, American
The Invaders.
Yes, all of that.
Canon.
Right? and The Fugitive, and The Untouchables, and all sorts of stuff.
A Quinn Martin production, as they used to say.
Yeah, that's right, QM production. So they were thinking of doing The Shadow.
Who knows what evil lurks within men's hearts?
The hearts of mine, the shadow does. So we were thinking of doing that, and I was writing the pilot. And when the network said, you know, we're having second thoughts about this, I don't know that, you know, it's such a great idea. Because, you know, half the show, you can't see the person. It's just the voice because they're invisible. So what can we do to make it different? And one of the fellows in the network meeting, one of the CBS network people said, I've got it. I've got the idea. We'll make him Chinese. That was it.
Yeah. There we are. Genius. Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, but even Alec Baldwin wouldn't have necessarily actually suited that right, when he did the whole thing. So we've just got to sort our way through that whole scenario. Yeah. Arthur, it's been fantastic. So I also have to mention Sherry Jackson, who should be coming on the show as well. She actually had two episodes of the Wild Wild West that she featured in. One was the Night of the Vicious Valentine, which was quite extraordinary on that sort of basis. But anyway, Hannah, would you like to throw those last two questions across the Atlantic in your capable Gloucestershire wonderful way to top screenwriter, producer, and general all-round wonderful person, Arthur Weingarten? Over to you, Hannah.
Of course I can. Arthur, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have. It's such a pleasure. I can't tell you how much fun I have.
And can we look forward to connecting with you in the near future?
If only you would.
I think it's become an alternate scenario, a bit much as The Girl from U.N.C.L.E. used to be alternated with The Man from U.N.C.L.E. on British television in the late 60s. I think we have Annette Andre alternating with Arthur Weingarten every couple of weeks or so. So it's coming round. The key line is Arthur will be back in May.
Hey! That's wonderful. I appreciate it.
They say the world must end somehow. They say the end's not far from now. I think they're wrong.
Katie Melua, If the Lights Go Out. Which hopefully, as long as the electricity keeps going, won't really. Hannah, it's 5:55. And Katie, it's 5:55. Actually, 5:55 and 54 seconds. What time is it?
Michelle Monroe.
Exactly.
Hi to everyone listening. It's Michelle Monroe here again with another musical melody from the catalogue of my father, the late, great Matt Monroe. Today's choice comes from 1975 and was released as both a single and an album. The title, The Long and Winding Road. Kenny Asher and Paul Williams wrote the song, and Williams himself debuted it on his 1974 album Here Comes Inspiration, singing it as a traditional love ballad. It was quickly snatched up by Helen Reddy for her album Love Song for Geoffrey, but she considered the lyrics too paternalistic to be convincing as a woman's declaration of love for a man. Instead, Reddy interpreted the song as a mother singing to her child. Released as the second single from her album, it reached number 9 on the Billboard's Hot 100 in September of 1974 and became the fourth of her 6 consecutive adult contemporary number ones. My father's version was recorded in November of that same year at Air Studios with Peter Knight arranging You and Me Against the World.
You and me against the world. Sometimes it feels like you and me against the world. When all the others turn their back and walk away, you can count on me to stay. Remember when the circus came to town? Frightened by the clown. Wasn't it nice to be around someone that you knew, someone who
big and strong and looking out for you and me against the world. Sometimes it feels like you and me against the world. And for all the times we've cried, I always felt the odds were on our side. And when one of us is gone, and one alone is left to carry on, well then, remembering will have to do. Our memories alone will get us through. Think about the days of me and you, of you and me against the world. Think about the days of me and you, of you and me against the world. You and me against the world.
See, it doesn't matter how stressful you might find the week. I always find the Michelle Monroe, Matt Monroe feature just sort of sets things right. You know, we know the weekend's close by. All's well with the world, really. We thought it was very exciting when we were talking to Arthur Weingarten, scriptwriter extraordinaire, producer of Maigret, etc., holding his script, say, still in here, first draft of the new adventures of Wonder Woman. But there's even more exciting young lady. In fact, she will be Wonder Woman. She quite frankly is Wonder Woman because of the way she actually crosses the globe in all so many ways. Whom are we referring to, Hannah O'Brien?
It's Tallulah Rendell.
Tallulah Rendell! Yay! Do you know, I was actually buttonholed by a group of Vox Pop people who I think were actually doing some sort of exercise in terms of media, and they said, oh, can we ask you a question? Can we ask you who your favourite musical artists are? Yeah, as ones frequently do. And I said, well, obviously Tallulah Rendell, and then probably a little touch of Matt Munro, and then I mentioned Rebecca Poole as well, but Tallulah Rendell, top choice there, you know, inevitably. Aww. From that sort of point of view. And quite rightly so too. We support our team. You know, you might be in Berlin these days via Africa and all sorts of other areas, but you know, in fact, in the Tallulah Rendell Fanbridge routine here, where have you been? Apologies for my radio silence. Sometimes life has an unusual way of intervening with long-made plans. Or as John Lennon once said, life is what happens while you're busy making other plans.
Exactly. So
you decided that, you know, there's a pause before you start the third album, the wonderful third album that's coming through from that point of view. And so you went off to, wait, I'm saying what you're doing. I mean, you know what you did. Well, you headed off to Africa to do all sorts of wonderful things.
Yeah, I had some time with my dad, which was really lovely. Ever first time that him and I have actually got to spend a good deal of time together, and to go to Africa after the whole Christian the Lion thing and see it through his eyes, and to just, you know, spend time in this amazing place which I've kind of grown up with but never seen, and been such a part of my childhood and, well, just life in general, was really just amazing and just so inspiring to write in this place with such big horizons and wild noises, and just, it was wonderful. It was really great, and a real gift, really.
It was quite literally.
It was, yeah.
But we haven't got time to play the whole thing, so we have to just fade it there. You know, the background there is wonderful stuff. You know, time's tight. Tallulah's got meetings to go to, so we need to work through that. Katie, you've been listening to some Tallulah Rendell material.
One song, yeah.
Well, it's a start, Tab. It's a start. You know, she's going to be working Edgbaston, and hopefully over the summer. So, you know, we sort of spread the word amongst cricketers.
Yeah.
So all sorted through from that point of view. And that song was, of course,
Black Seagull.
Oh.
Yeah, trusty Black Seagull.
Yes.
That's
It is going. Your mum loves it as well. You know, she's constantly saying Black Seagull. As you know, I'm more of a treble person than you can't even remember playing that. But there we are.
I thought it sounded a bit like Kate Bush.
Do you know what? It's amazing because I was never—I've never been a massive Kate Bush fan. I just never—I never really listened to her stuff. And then I was chatting to Dad about it when we were away, and I was like, "Yeah, everyone always says I sound like Kate Bush." And he said, "Well, when your mum was pregnant with you, I used to listen to it all the time." And I was like, really?
Thanks, Dad.
So I think kind of...
Was it the kick inside? Was it, you know, what are you talking about here? You know, a woman's work? You know, what's going on here? Dear Lord. Yeah. Running up that hill. I mean, there are so many inappropriate songs to listen to whilst you're pregnant. And Kate Bush, please, you know?
Yeah, so I think there might have been a little bit of subliminal kind of...
Evidently. Still, it could have been more challenging. You could have actually been listening to Def Leppard or Motorhead. I don't know. It could have been all sorts of things. Lord knows what could have actually happened.
Luckily not.
Anyway, Katie's currently actually ensconced in the concept album, as we say, which I always like to bring out because it is a classic. But Hannah, you've had a little perusal through that. Questions from yourself?
And I had a bit of a listen to some of your songs as well. I was just wondering what kind of inspires you when you're writing your songs?
Life, my life, people that I pass across. Just, I mean, it really it's funny. And now that I'm writing the third album at the moment, the writing process for me has just evolved so much over the last 10 years. And I used to write more just this kind of stream of consciousness, and I was really seduced by kind of allegorical, kind of just really extraordinary, like Black Seagull or kind of Ghost on the Water, these sort of strange metaphors. And with this album at the moment, it's a really different process for me. It's become a real very clear and honest reflection of my little journey in life. And I'm in kind of uncharted territory at the moment. Life basically inspires me.
Blind Like a Fool was, I think, one of your favourites, Hannah, is that right?
Yeah. I really like the animation in the video as well.
It's fantastic. You know, just looking at that video, it's marvellous. You know, you almost have to lie down. There's so much enthusiasm about the whole thing. And I'm thinking, actually, Tal, last year, of course, we had your trip up to around the various coffee shops of the country. You know, up in Middlesbrough, we finally got you to play in Lincoln. I missed your Lincoln gig. Was there for the Middlesbrough routine.
Yeah.
Does being in Berlin mean that your British fans will have to say, oh, she's all German now, much like Sarah Chase?
No. My life is very much split between the UK and Germany now. It's as soon as I came out here, as is normal with anything like that, I just started getting really busy back in England as well. So, but I've got a really great team of people here, and it's a good space for me to write in. And there's just such a musical fervour here and a support system which is, I don't feel so much in the UK, and it's not so saturated with crap music.
One Direction think very highly of you, Tal. I mean, they're doing very well in the States, you know.
And Australia.
Exactly. Don't get me started on the X Factor and all the gems that have come from that. No, I mean, it's a different line. Currently, you're obviously gearing up for the May 2012 tour supporting Charlene Soraya.
Yeah.
And it's a boy you actually said that, because initially when you said you were beginning the tour supporting Charlene, I thought, are you referring to Charlene who had a hit in the 80s with I've Never Been to Me? Surely not, you know? But no, it is Charlene Soraya, who's a wonderful stuff. Yeah. And of course, the latest album is going to be entitled Alive, as opposed to the Frankenstein It's Alive, or just A Life, or A Live. But no, Alive. Alive.
Alive's the second album. And that's the album that I released last year, but in Germany it's being re-released there because of the deal that I've just done. So I'm touring that in May, and then the third album is actually called The Banshee and the Moon.
Nice, good title.
But that's not going to be, that won't be out until next year. It's still there'll be singles hopefully at the end of this year, but it's, you know, there's still record deals to be needed and all those various different things.
You cannot hurry genius. I mean, I
exactly.
say this time and time again. Precisely. And presumably, if you're talking about the Banshee and the Moon, we're referring to the Marvel Comics character, the Banshee, Sean, of course, who actually sort of has the superpower of the sonic scream based after the Irish ghoul of the same name.
But in my mind, she doesn't eat people. She's more of this kind of wonderfully wonderful spirit that basically is kind of all-wise and all-knowing and just kind of is completely free and untamable and is just, you know, this thing that I would love to be and aspire to be.
Got to ask you the question, Tal. We asked a couple of people earlier in the show, and because we're trying to put it on the map, have you ever been to Colwyn Bay?
Is it in England?
Yeah, you see. No, technically.
It's in North Wales.
Yeah.
It's no.
Crucial scenario.
I did go to the place where the funicular was.
You did, Saltburn, the funicular lift, exactly.
So yeah, I went there.
You did indeed. I think, as I recall, I actually drove you there, Tal.
Exactly.
You didn't have a great deal of choice. Basically, it's a case of, no, let me out, she was saying, let me out. It's all right, Tal, have faith. It was all sorted through there. Photographs are all sorted through. I think your mum's forgiven me now. Anyway, Katie, any questions for Tal?
Which artists do you like? And what music are you into?
There's actually a German artist that I came across last week called Apparat, who I think is fantastic. But from the old school, I mean, I was a massive Nina Simone or Jeff Buckley and Nick Drake fan, and but also, you know, Stones, AC/DC. You know, kind of love my good old rock and roll, and you know.
Yeah. You're nodding sagely, Hannah. Does this mean that Tallulah Rendell has passed the university student cool test?
Yeah, I really like Jeff Buckley. So
he's great. Yeah, he's the one person that I really, really would have loved to have seen. I could kind of, you know, yeah, I would have just loved to have seen him play.
Yeah.
Really amazing voice.
We'll try and get a time machine or something to actually together, Tal, and we'll get that sorted through. You know, it's a whole
and I'll meet him in the next life somewhere.
It's all connected together. It's much like these radio gigs. You know, it's all sorted through its own magical way.
Yeah.
Ghost on the Water, Blind Like a Fool, Nothing Is Over, Alive, Time Away, Wake Up, Lay Me Down, Trouble Only You. Anyone grabs your attention, Tal, in terms of that's what I'd like to send to the British citizens and the citizens of the globe who might be listening online to sirenonline.co.uk as my little parting gift to them before I actually head off to deal with the Teutonic people in the world today?
I think Blind Like a Fool. I think it's time to shake her. Shake a tail feather.
Shake a tail feather. Fantastic. Let's take us round to Derek Hanley. Meanwhile, those last two questions for Tallulah Rendell. Access, of course, details on TallulahRendell.com. Magical things will happen if you press those buttons. But what are those last two questions, Hannah?
Tallulah, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have had a reasonably interesting telephonic. Did you come up with that? Because I've been saying it for 7 years.
Yeah. I like to feel that's the point of having it as a catchphrase, you know. And Hannah's just come off a show where they start off with deal or no deal, just two questions. So, you know, steal the audience.
But it's the fact that it's such a tongue twister. I'm always like, yes, I've had a really satisfactory telephonic question. I'm always so sure that I'm going to say it wrong.
You see, Tal, it also confirms that our co-presenters are not inebriated as well. So it's got a double edge.
Okay.
That's very good.
You know, it's all right. I trip over it sometimes as well.
Okay, good. And not alone.
The next one is?
Can we look forward to hearing from you in the near future?
Yes, you can.
Hey! By the way, what's the weather like in Berlin, Tal?
It's cold.
Oh, you see, echoing that. You know, none of this Nashville, 70 degrees, Los Angeles, New York.
I forgot here.
It's cold in Berlin.
Yeah. Be well.